My name is Cameron John, and for some time in my life, I lived shortly with a foster family as both my parents had passed away when I was 9 years old. My mom died from diabetes, and my dad died from a heart attack not long after. Understandably, the years that followed that incident were horrible for me, but to this day, no experience has been as horrifying as the Bishop's foster family. It all started shortly after my father passed. I was a 9-year-old only child with almost no immediate relatives, so it didn't take long for child services to arrive and take me away. I was informed there was nothing to be worried about as they already had a foster family assigned to me. The ward also informed me that my new foster family was well known and had previously taken care of up to 13 kids in the past, and the government trusted them completely with the safety of kids like me. The next day, I was put in a car with my ward and taken to my new home. As we arrived, the first thing I noticed was the home was in a very remote area. A large house stood alone, surrounded by a massive field, and the whole thing was surrounded by a fence. It was a beautiful sight, if I'm being honest, but at the time, nothing could really make me happy. We drove past the gate and towards the house where a group of people stood waiting. Out the window, I noticed an extra person mowing the field. He should have been around 6'7", but his clothes hinted he wasn't a part of the family, so I simply looked away. I stepped down from the car and realized the group was made up of 9 people. The father was dressed in a black and white priest gown, and the mother, something similar with a scarf on her head. The 7 kids behind them varied in ethnicity and age, but I could tell just by looking that amongst them, I would be the youngest. The mother immediately walked up to me and gave me a tight hug. She pulled away saying,
"Hello, Cameron. We know it's been a hard few days, but you'll be fine. Welcome to the Bishop family."
The days after that were completely normal. I was introduced to the kids and discovered I was right in assuming I'd be the youngest, as the one closest to me was a 12-year-old girl named Angela. Ironically, it turned out Mr. Bishop was an actual priest, and for the little time I'd spent at the house, I'd never seen him in anything other than his black and white gown. The large man I saw mowing the lawn was in the house regularly and seemed to be part of the family. Everyone called him Uncle Sam, and when he wasn't mowing, he'd be fixing something or talking with the adults. I spent most of my time outside in the fields reading, as the kids weren't allowed to go to school. Instead, we were homeschooled by mother and spent most of the day doing nothing. "Guys, aren't you sometimes bored staying home all day?" It took some time, but eventually, Angela responded,
"Father and mother say we aren't ready yet."
She continued with,
"They say if we go outside, the demons will come for us, and nobody wants that."
I was confused, as I figured we'd all been outside at least once in the past before coming here, but that's when the oldest child, Arthur, spoke.
"Besides, I don't know about you, but we're happy here. There's no purpose for people like us out there. Here's safe and the outside isn't. There's way too many sinners out there, and quite simply, it's disgusting."
He paused and held contact before saying,
"Also, the demons that took our parents are still out there. We need to be complete or they'll take us too."
I didn't know what it was at that time, but after that conversation, I never felt right being with the other kids. I simply cried that night and went to bed. I woke up later that night to use the toilet, and I could tell it was really late at night, but as I walked towards the bathroom, I began hearing muffled noises. I couldn't tell where they were coming from, but after noticing them, I couldn't stop noticing. I decided it was probably nothing, simply got back in bed and chose to ignore the noises that night. The next morning, I couldn't stop thinking about those noises I heard the previous night, so I decided to ask mother and father.
"I woke up last night to pee and I heard a couple of weird noises. Do you guys know what they were?"
Father kept his usual expressionless face and simply looked away, but mother looked at me and replied,
"Now, Cameron, you shouldn't have been awake so late at night. That's when the demons come out. You're simply not yet complete, so it's not safe. But don't worry, we'll take care of you till you're ready."
She plastered a smile on her face and left. Every night after that, I woke up around the same time to hear the same noises I heard that night.
A part of me was curious, but I was mostly scared by what Mother had said, so I would always force myself back to sleep. That was until that horrible night. I had been living with the bishops for 3 months now, and for almost 2 whole months, I had been hearing the same muffled noises every night from somewhere in the house. So I decided it was time to finally check it out. I woke up at the same time I always did, and sure enough, I could hear the muffled noises. Although I wasn't close to any, my plan was simply to get one of the other kids to come look with me. I walked into Arthur's room first, but his bed was completely empty. I figured he probably had to use the bathroom, so decided to get someone else, but shockingly, all 7 rooms were identical, with all 7 beds being completely empty. My naive mind immediately began to think back to what Mother had told me about the demons, and it didn't take long for my palms to start sweating and my stomach to drop. I began to think the demons had taken everyone else and I was next, so completely scared, I headed for the parents' room. I had never gone in there before, but my fear wasn't letting me think clearly, so I walked right in without knocking and shut the door. It took a while for me to catch my breath, but when I did, I turned to see a large bed that stood in an odd position, almost like it had been moved, and just like the other rooms, no one was in it. It was only at this point I noticed the muffled noises seemed louder and were obviously coming from this room. More importantly, they weren't muffled, and I could now tell without a doubt that they were in fact voices. I slowly approached the bed, and sure enough, it had been moved to reveal a wooden staircase that led to the voices I had been hearing. I couldn't tell what was happening from where I was standing, but for some reason, I was scared, as I didn't know what I would see, but I knew for a fact it wasn't something I was meant to see. Against my better judgment, I slowly walked down the staircase until I could see. My heart dropped immediately. I saw what was going on. The Bishop family, all dressed in Father's black and white gown, they stood in a circle, and in the middle was a middle-aged man in his underwear. The man was knelt down with both hands chained to the walls. His body had marks all over, and his mouth was gagged shut. It also looked like his head had been shaved, and there were pieces of leftover hair on his head. The family was constantly chanting the words, "To purge the sinner, to purge the sinner, to purge the sinner." But eventually, Father walked towards the man and signaled for silence. He then proceeded to say,
"Family, we are gathered here once more because evil never rests. That is why we will never rest."
He paused to collect a knife from Arthur before continuing with,
"Bishops, what is our purpose?"
They all responded once more with the words,
"To purge the sinner."
At this point, I was completely gripped by fear. But I had just realized the family was crazy. Knew I had to get out of the house quickly. But as I turned to leave, the stairs let out a large creak, and immediately the family turned to see me.
"Cameron, I told you not to be up by this time. We haven't even started your lessons yet."
Mother looked at me more disappointed than shocked, and none of the family members even seemed to care about the fact I, a 9-year-old child, had seen what they were doing. That's when Father said,
"It's fine, Madeline. Come, Cameron."
He gestured for me to walk towards him. I slowly walked back down to him, and he placed a hand around my shoulder before facing me towards the chained up man, saying,
"The lessons on humanity we teach you are
just that.
Lesson. What makes you a truly complete human is moments like these. The man before you is a sinner."
His scream startled me, and I began to cry.
"Sin is the reason God punishes us. Why he's taken all your families. Sinners are the reason you are alone in this world. Now, will you allow more pain and suffering, Cameron? It's your duty to prevent that. So here."
At this point, he forced the knife into my hand and pushed me closer to the man.
"Cut his throat, Cameron, and become complete. You are no longer alone. You are now a bishop. And what is the duty of a bishop?"
The room replied,
"To purge the sinner."
I was shaking now, and I could tell the man in front of me was just as scared as I was. I continued to cry as he held my shoulders and repeated the words,
"Purge the sinner."
Eventually, I was able to gather my thoughts, and as Father repeated those words, I took the knife and stabbed it in his leg. He instantly let out a screeching sound, and I immediately ran up the stairs and out of the room. I didn't stop running, and it wasn't long till I was out the door and headed for the gate. But I soon heard footsteps behind me and turned to see the looming figure of Uncle Sam charging towards me. He wasn't close initially, but every time I turned, he seemed closer and closer. I could now see the gate and what seemed like headlights coming towards it. And at that moment, all I could do was hope I got there before Uncle Sam got to me. I ran out the gate and fell hard on the road. The car headed my way, abruptly stopped, and seated in the driver's seat was an elderly lady.
"Is everything all right, young man?"
she said, looking out the window. I quickly ran to the other side, crying, and said,
"Please help me, ma'am. Please. They're trying to kill me."
The initial confusion was written all over the woman's face, but she simply opened the door and I quickly got in. As we drove off, I looked out the corner of my eye to see Uncle Sam standing by the open gate, staring furiously at me, and in the distance, the silhouette of who I assumed was Father staring out of a window from the house. Soon enough, the house was out of sight, and that would be the last time I would ever see the Bishop household. In the weeks that followed, I explained the situation to my ward and the officers in charge of the case. At first, they all thought I was an orphan acting out, but that view completely changed after they visited the home and found no trace of the Bishop family. Blood samples were found in the hidden basement I described, but most samples appeared to have a mixture of different people's DNA and proved inconclusively. In the end, only a few victims were identified. The fact I claimed to hear those noises every night for almost 2 months led authorities to believe the Bishop family had taken up to an estimated 200 lives in the past few years. The government ended up putting me in an orphanage for the next 9 years of my life, and as expected, I received regular therapy and counseling during my time in the orphanage. The truth is, anyone who hasn't been a foster kid can't truly understand the courage it takes to live with a complete group of strangers. The ideals, beliefs, and culture of these strangers may not be what we think they are. Some people get loving homes while others end up in the worst places imaginable, disguised as loving homes. I, on the other hand, was stuck in hell during my time in foster care, and I hope no one ever experiences what it's like to be a part of the Bishop foster care family.
Hey guys, my name is Angie, and I have a very difficult job. I check that foster care families meet all the requirements to care for a child until we find a family for them to be adopted. When the house is in order, it is the best time for my job, as the children are usually very happy. But it doesn't always go very well. There are other cases where the family lies in the interview or on the form, and when we check their homes to verify it, we find out the truth. Those cases are never good, as the family that was going to take care of the child ends up crying or getting angry. After a few years, you realize that all the patterns are similar, except for this family. The family seemed lovely, but I felt there was something off about them. When I went to interview them personally, I realized I should have followed my intuition. The house where they were going to care for the foster child was terrifying. There were knives on the floor, rats everywhere, and to make it worse, used toilet paper on the floor. It was disgusting. When I told the owners that I was not going to be able to accept them as foster parents, they didn't freak out. They didn't do anything. They just stared at me with a huge, disinterested smile. So far, that was my craziest story since I've been working here. Little did I know that something much worse was about to happen to me. A few days after that visit, I was on the bus telling that story to a friend on my cell phone. The bus was pretty empty, and it was late at night. I was late for a visit, and my husband's car was not working. I had thought about taking an Uber, but what the hell? I had ridden public transportation too many times to chicken out. As the bus continued to move forward, there were fewer and fewer people on it. So many people got off that I started to stare at the few that were left. Among them, two people caught my attention. There were two people in robes. They were both ahead of me, so I couldn't see their faces. but I could tell something. They were laughing. They weren't laughing a lot, but in an unnatural way. They weren't looking at each other either. They were just looking straight ahead, laughing, not interacting. I started to get very nervous. I felt that these people were going to cause trouble, and I could not wait for them to get off. The bus stations went by and by, and people went by and by, but they were still there. Now they were not only laughing among themselves without looking at each other, but I could see them looking at me out of the corner of their eyes and laughing even louder than before. They weren't even looking at each other. I was all they could see. I felt very nervous and wanted to get off, but this neighborhood was quite dangerous. At least here I was protected, and these people wouldn't dare do anything with the driver around. I was coming to my stop and got up from my seat, but to my surprise, so did these two people. I sat down quickly and confirmed my suspicions. They sat down too. They didn't even bother to make it look casual. I was in danger, and they wanted me to know it. I stayed in my seat, wondering what to do. My next move was obvious. I asked my husband to wait for me at the terminal station and told him that I was in danger. As long as I was on the bus, nothing could happen to me. The rest of the people kept getting off slowly until it was just us. We were one stop away from the terminal, and to my surprise, both people got off. Were they just messing with me? They both approached the driver's seat. Both the driver and I thought they were going to get off, but what they did next froze me in my tracks. One of them pulled out a handkerchief and began to press it in the face of the driver, who had just parked to get two people out. The driver fell asleep in a matter of seconds. That napkin must have had chloroform on it. Terrified, I watched as these two people began to walk towards me slowly, taking off their hoods and revealing their identities. I already knew these two people. They were the people who had applied to take care of a child for a month. They were the foster care parents that I rejected for having such strange behavior. I ran as fast as I could to the door, and at that moment, I just realized what had happened. The driver was passed out. There was no one to open the door for me. The windows of the bus were sealed, and the ones that could be opened were too high and too small for me to get through. I was completely locked in. Knowing my situation, the couple walked slowly and casually toward me, enjoying every moment of panic that passed through my body. Surrendered, I fell into one of the back seats, and crying, I asked them not to do anything to me, that I was sorry for not giving them the custody of the child, that I would do everything I could to get them to adopt, but to please leave without hurting me. The people kept walking, ignoring every word I said. Suddenly, I had an idea. I grabbed one of the emergency hammers and pulled it out with all my strength. I started to hit the window, but it was too late. The two terrifying people were standing next to me, laughing their heads off with a demented look in their eyes. The eyes of both people were huge. Veins ran down their faces, and their smiles reached from ear to ear. It was a huge smile, but forced. It was as if they couldn't stop laughing, even if they wanted to. Behind their laughter, their eyes reflected a terrible hatred for me. That day, I thought that they didn't care that I had rejected them. But now, I realized that they did very much. I told them that if they took one more step, I would hit them with a hammer. But the threat didn't work. The man lunged at me and squeezed my eyes with his huge fingers. I had never felt so much pain in my life. It was the most horrible and strange sensation. I felt that my own eyes were about to explode against my brain. I managed to kick and run as fast as I could, but I was still on the bus. I tried to open my eyes, but the pain was too great. So I just kept the hammer in the air, hoping to hit someone, while I listened as the steps of two assailants came closer and closer. One of the two footsteps accelerated and rushed toward me. It was the woman. I could feel her nails digging into my legs, and a bite on my ankle numbed all my skin. As I screamed in pain, I heard the man's footsteps walking slowly toward me. Surely, he would be the one to finish me off. Still unable to open my eyes, I heard a glass next to me break, and someone walked up the steps to the front door. His voice was familiar. It was my husband. I heard a fight and people falling. I heard screams and suddenly silence. Footsteps approached me quickly. Whose were they? Terrified, I tried to defend myself until I heard my husband's voice telling me we had to leave as soon as possible. I felt him put me on his shoulder and ran as fast as he could. A few hours later, I was better. My eyes still hurt, but I was able to open them. We called the police, and when they went to check the bus, the unthinkable happened. Both psychopaths were still on the bus, laughing nonstop. They were eating the bus driver's body. The police stopped them. They didn't put up any resistance. They just kept on laughing. Once they were arrested, the police asked me to testify, and I told them everything. It was soon learned that these were two dangerous psychopaths who had escaped from a hospital many years before. Why they laughed so much, tried to take care of a child, or wanted to get back at me was a mystery. I am ashamed to admit this, but a part of me is grateful that they killed that poor bus driver. If they hadn't, these people would have gotten away. And who knows what they would have done to me if they had come across my path again.